is for What's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Before leaving for Greece Monday, President Obama discussed his trip to Greece, Germany, and Peru.
I look forward to my first visit in Greece. And then in Germany, I'll visit with Chancellor Merkel, who's probably been my closest international partner these past 8 years. I'll also signal our solidarity with our closest allies and express our support for a strong, integrated, and united Europe.
In Peru, Mr. Obama is to take part in a two-day Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. During a White House news conference Monday, his first since Donald Trump's election victory, Mr. Obama said in his meeting with the president-elect, he came away convinced Mr. Trump is committed to the transatlantic alliance.
He expressed a great interest in maintaining our core strategic relationships. And so one of the messages I will be able to deliver is his commitment to NATO and the transatlantic alliance.
Mr. Obama said he believes the incoming president is not as ideological as people think, and that he will be a pragmatic leader as long as he's surrounded by good people. But he told reporters the New York businessman faces a quick wake-up call when he confronts the realities of the job he'll take over January 20th. Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes said no matter the outcome of the election, Mr. Obama and the rest of his administration have a stake in seeing the next leader succeed, and the world has a similar interest. Nigerian police said at least 9 people were killed Monday after police opened fire on attacking Shia Muslims in the north outside the city of Kano. The violence occurred as members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria conducted an annual procession to Zaria, neighboring Kaduna State. The sect said dozens of its members were killed. A judicial inquiry in August reported hundreds of members were killed and buried in mass graves. This is VOA News. In Iraq Monday, at least 14 people killed in suicide bombings in Fallujah and the nearby Shia holy city of Karbala, claimed by the Islamic State. The attack near Karbala came as thousands of Shia Muslims gathered for a religious event. The bombings occurred as Iraqi-led forces continued an offensive to liberate the IS-held city of Mosul. Artillery units of the 9th Armored Division fired mortar rounds against IS targets in the village of Shahrazad. Captain Haider Hassan Nawaf said his forces are carrying out the shelling of targets identified earlier by artillery command so units can advance. Meanwhile, the UN said Monday more than 54,000 have been displaced in Mosul, an increase of more than 6,000 since Friday. The United States Monday condemned an Israeli committee's recommendation to advance legislation that legalizes an unauthorized Jewish settlement scheduled to be dismantled next month in the West Bank on private Palestinian land. Elizabeth Trudeau is a U.S. spokesperson.
If this law were enacted, it could pave the way for the legalization of dozens of illegal outposts deep in the West Bank. This would represent an unprecedented and troubling step that's inconsistent with prior Israeli legal opinion and also break longstanding Israeli policy of not building on private Palestinian land.
She said settlements are corrosive to the cause of peace. The Israeli committee's action defied Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Israel's attorney general has called the bill legally flawed. President-elect Trump spoke Monday with Russia's President Vladimir Putin, who congratulated him on his November 8th election victory. He said Moscow is ready for a partner-like dialogue with the U.S. The incoming leader told Mr. Putin he's looking forward to a strong and enduring relationship with Russia. A Kremlin release said the two men agreed that U.S.-Russian ties are extremely unsatisfactory now, and their talks need to be based on equality, mutual respect, and non-interference in each other's affairs. The president-elect also spoke with Argentina's leader, President Mauricio Macri, who is also a former businessman. The Gambia Monday officially notified the Hague-based International Criminal Court it's withdrawing, the third African country to do so, over allegations the ICC is a tool of persecution of Africans and their leaders, while ignoring crimes committed elsewhere. South Africa and Burundi both notified the UN last month of their intention to do the same. In New Zealand, 24 hours after a massive earthquake struck the South Island, hundreds of tourists and residents are being evacuated by helicopter from the hard-hit town of Kakura. The tremor destroyed farms, cut communications, buckled roads, causing landslides, a brief tsunami, and killed at least 2 people. And Russia's economy minister has been detained over allegations of taking a multi-million-dollar bribe. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Democratic Republic of Congo's Prime Minister resigns to make way for a national unity government.
Le Premier ministre Augustin Matata ayant présenté la démission du gouvernement.
Lambert Mende announced on Monday that earlier in the day, Congolese Prime Minister Augustin Matata Ponyo had presented his government's resignation to President Joseph Kabila.
That's VOA's William Klaus in Kinshasa. Meanwhile, a member of the main opposition coalition, Rassemblement, says President Kabila is playing with fire by trying to maintain himself in power. Nigeria's Biafra separatists see hope in the election of Donald Trump. And Sierra Leone raises the prices of petroleum products.
We worked with our international partners like the World Bank and the IMF, and it became increasingly clear that for us to balance our books, government should first look inwards and reduce expenditure, restricting the travel for ministers, as you rightly pointed.
Abdoulaye Berete is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. We'll examine how Gambia's decision to leave the International Criminal Court might impact next month's presidential election. And a linguistic dispute roils Cameroon's justice system. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In line with last month's agreement between supporters of Congolese President Joseph Kabila and an opposition faction, the country's prime minister has announced his resignation. A new government of national unity is expected to be named shortly, even though many opposition members are still against the agreement. William Klaus has the latest from Kinshasa.
Le Premier ministre Augustin Matata ayant présenté la démission du gouvernement.
Lambert Mende announced on Monday that this would be his final press conference as the DRC's Minister of Communications. He said that earlier in the day, Congolese Prime Minister Augustin Matata Ponyo had presented his government's resignation to President Joseph Kabila. The dissolution of the government had been expected since October 18th, when Kabila supporters and an opposition faction led by Vital Kamerhe reached a deal for managing the country after December 19th, the final day of the president's second and, under the current constitution, final term. The deal states that Kabila can stay in office until the organization of elections, which have been provisionally scheduled for April 2018, and Kamerhe's opposition faction will join a government of national unity. A larger opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement has rejected the agreement. It is unclear when Kabila will name a new prime minister, but the president will give a rare address to the two chambers of parliament on Tuesday. After meeting on Monday with the president, Kamerhe, considered a favorite to become prime minister, said his faction and Kabila will manage the country together to organize elections. During the weekend, Kabila met with a UN Security Council delegation that urged Congolese political and social actors to work together towards consensual and inclusive elections. Mende had firm words for the UN delegation, which asked Kabila about the lack of clarity around the date of the next election.
Le chef de l'État s'est dit surpris de constater d'une part que la question des dates lui soit adressée.
According to Mende, Kabila was surprised to be asked about election dates, when that area is the constitutional prerogative of the Independent Electoral Commission. The Rassemblement, however, accuses the president of deliberately undermining the commission to postpone elections. Mende also criticized the delegation's focus on whether Kabila intends to change the constitution to allow him to stand for a third term.
Je cite le président. Il est curieux que c'est au seul président de la République.
Quoting Kabila, Mende said it is curious that tendentious questions about possible third terms are only ever put to the president of the DRC, a country where no one has ever considered changing the constitution, unlike several others in Africa. Mende, still quoting Kabila, also said that the president has repeatedly said that the constitution, which excludes a third term, will be respected. The Rassemblement accuses the president of planning to remove term limits before the next election. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement says President Joseph Kabila is playing with fire by trying to maintain himself in power. This comes after DRC Prime Minister Augustin Matata Ponyo resigned on Monday to make way for the formation of a national unity government as part of an agreement reached last month between President Kabila and a smaller opposition coalition. Martin Fayulu, a member of the Rassemblement, says President Kabila must respect the constitution and step down on December 19, when his term in office comes to an end. He said those who signed the October agreement are supporters of President Kabila and do not represent the true Congolese opposition.
For the Rassemblement, we think that Mr. Kabila is playing a bad game. The members of the UN Council, they met with Mr. Kabila and they met with the civil society here. And they advise that all of us, we should go and discuss through a frank dialogue. But what Mr. Kabila is playing, he wants to stay in power to promote his dialogue, the dialogue with the accord they had on October 18th. And for us, we cannot agree. We are saying that on December 19th, the mandate of Mr. Kabila will stop. And as we will not have the election, we should sit down together and see how to organize the power to prepare the election.
The resignation of the prime minister, according to him, is in line with the agreement that was signed between the Kabila government and the other opposition. What talk do you want again? Because this agreement has been endorsed by the UN Secretary General.
No, the agreement was not endorsed. The UN Secretary General and the member of the UN Security Council, they said, you guys in Congolese, you should have a talk. You should have a dialogue, inclusive dialogue, not dialogue which only had Kabila's people. The accord they signed on October 19 is not an accord. The Rassemblement was not there. How can you sign an accord today in Congo without Tshisekedi and his people, and then you say that you have signed an accord with the opposition? Those who were there, they are not the guy in the opposition. You can list them and see all of them. They are Kabila's people. They were with him, they left him, and now they're back again to his camp.
Mr. Fayulu, you talked earlier about the December 19th. What does the opposition want to see happen on December 19th, Saturday this week?
December 19th, we will have a meeting. We'll have a popular meeting. And we have told people here in Kinshasa to come to the stadium, Kinshasa Stadium. And Tshisekedi will deliver a speech and will give some messages to Congolese.
So is it the view of the Rassemblement that Mr. Kabila should step down still?
Yeah, for us, on December 19 this year, this is not negotiable. This should stop. Because the second and the last mandate comes to the end, it should stop.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Sierra Leone's government is defending why it imposed a price hike on petroleum products in the country. The government announced last week to end subsidy of petroleum products, raising the price of a gallon of gasoline, kerosene, diesel, and fuel oil. Abdoulaye Berete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma, says removing the subsidy was necessary to address the loss of revenue caused by the Ebola crisis, which affected the tourism industry and plummeting prices of iron ore.
We have been subsidizing this product since 2007 when we came into governance. We never bothered with the direct or indirect taxes, which in 2014 alone, government was expending about 149 billion leones as subsidy, just so that we can cushion the challenges the public may face. But we have reached at a point whereby we have been plummeted by a very low revenue base as a result of Ebola, whereby the World Bank just released a report for 2016, whereby Sierra Leone's revenue base lost about $1.9 billion.
Mr. Beretti, your government has been in power probably around 10 years. Recently, you announced travel restriction on government ministers and now the fuel price increase. Now, people say, why did you not do this when you took over the government until after 10 years before you can start to do it?
Well, the reason has been very obvious. When we came into governance, our priority is to turn over the economy. That, for us, will create the enabling economic environment that will attract direct foreign investment, as well as to create local entrepreneurs. Thus, we embarked on massive infrastructural development across the country. That, of course, created jobs and employment. Thus, the economy was booming. So during that period, we don't think it's necessary to remove fuel subsidies. But as I indicated, because of the plummeting of the prices of iron ore in the international market, revenue was lost in the hands of government. And also, the Ebola, of course, contributed to loss of revenue. Tourism became affected and other ancillary areas that government will have generated income. So because of this, we worked with our international partners like the World Bank and the IMF, and it became increasingly clear that for us to balance our books, government should first look inwards and reduce expenditure, restricting the travel for ministers, as you rightly pointed, and also to cut on recurrent expenditures for all ministries, departments, and agencies, so that we'll be able to recuperate some monies that will be recycled into the servicing of the critical social service delivery programs.
Now, let me say what your critics are saying, that perhaps your government messed up the economy, and now 10 years after, you're trying to make up for the mistakes.
Well, we have indicated that all what we say, there is evidence. When we talk about the economic impact assessment as a result of Ebola, we've referred them to the World Bank report. Of course, the IMF just completed their country assessment, and they said the president must be congratulated because he has handled the economy by meeting all the benchmarks set by the International Monetary Fund, and as well as increasing our reserves by over $500 million.
Abdullahi Beretti is the spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 15th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. Gambia has notified the United Nations of its intent to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, a move that would come into effect a year from now. Last month, Burundi and South Africa both also let the UN know they will be pulling out of the ICC in a year as well. James Workington, Human Rights Watch's West Africa researcher, talks to Ricky Stryak about how this could affect next month's presidential election in Gambia and more.
It's hard to see the ICC withdrawal is too connected to these elections. I think it fits within a broader pattern of the Jammeh government of not sanctioning those responsible for human rights abuses, and in fact trying to both ignore and obstruct efforts to hold the government of Gambia accountable for the abuses that it's committed in the past. It also fits within the government's anti-Western rhetoric that's been a big part of Jammeh's time in power, and particularly over the last year. So I think its timing is certainly interesting as regards to the election, but I don't think it's that closely related.
What about the irony of the fact that the ICC's chief prosecutor at the moment is in fact from Gambia and was an advisor to Gambian President Jammeh right after he seized power in 1994?
The fact that ICC prosecutor Bensouda is Gambian is something that people have sort of sought to connect to the Gambia's withdrawal. But I think in reality, for what I said, the reasons for Gambia's withdrawal are much more closely connected to Gambia's current political situation, the attitude of the government towards efforts to hold people accountable for human rights abuses. And I think Bensouda herself has said that this is not a personal attack on her. We certainly don't think that the government of Gambia provides any kind of example for other states in Africa or elsewhere who show themselves far more respectful of human rights, both in the way that they treat their own citizens and in their attitude to the ICC.
how much this will this really affect anything in Gambia, or will it? I mean, the ICC has, they've never brought a case against anybody from Gambia, or are there current cases that this would, you know, then nullify?
No, exactly. At this point, although Gambia has been a country in which, you know, for example, in April, we saw an opposition activist beaten to death in custody. And certainly there has been extrajudicial killings in Gambia in the past, including of journalists. It's not yet been at the point at which the ICC prosecutor has initiated an investigation into what has happened in Gambia. And so, in effect, as you say, it's not as if the withdrawal has any impact on ongoing cases happening inside the country. What it does mean is it certainly that it would be much more difficult in future either for the ICC to initiate an investigation and a prosecution about events that have occurred in the past, including when Gambia was a member of the ICC, then anything that occurs after that date, the ICC would not have jurisdiction over, subject to, you know, a Security Council referral or a mechanism that's a bit more drastic than that.
There is this legitimate kind of criticism of the ICC in that they only go up after African leaders. How much do you think this could maybe affect the ICC's agenda as far as who they go after?
I mean, first of all, when you speak to African human rights groups and to African victims of human rights abuses, it's not a criticism that they themselves share.
That was Jim Walkington, West Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York City. The head of the Biafra separatist movement in Nigeria has written an open letter to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. The movement hopes Trump, who backed British voters' decision to leave the European Union, will also support a push for Biafra to win independence. Chika Odua has the story from Abuja.
Kanu currently sits in a prison in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, charged with treason for supporting a movement calling for territories in southeastern Nigeria to break away and form a country called Biafra. Biafra tried to break away once before in a three-year war starting in 1967 that left at least 1 million people dead, mostly from starvation. Kanu and other activists hope Trump will be sympathetic to a new push for Biafran independence.
He believes in the unalienable right of the indigenous people to self-determination. And he has spoken it, he has written it, he has acted it, and we believe he will support indigenous people all over the world to self-determine.
That's Clifford Iroanya, a spokesman for the Indigenous Peoples of Biafra organization. Iroanya says he was pleased when Trump expressed support for Britain's decision to leave the European Union with a tweet on June 24th that said, "Self-determination is the sacred right of all free people." Biafra supporters say they too have the self-determination and should be allowed to break away from Nigeria. The Biafran movement was disappointed with outgoing U.S. President Barack Obama, who they saw as a supporter of Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari.
Then we felt that there is no point proceeding with talking to Mr. Obama because it would be like preaching to the choir. He is the backbone of Muhammadu Buhari.
Buhari was the one who ordered Kanu to be held in custody. Buhari, who had a long career in the Nigerian military, fought against Biafran independence when he was a young soldier and maintains a hard line against the Biafra movement. Kanu remains in custody on instructions from Buhari, despite orders from Nigerian courts and a regional West African court to release him. Many Biafra supporters do not want to return to war. Ifeanyi Nsionu was a six-year-old boy when the Biafra War broke out in 1967.
We really suffered. We were in a refugee camp, and then we were feeding us in the camp. It was horrible. You know, we had to eat lizards. All these guys that are agitating for this Biafra thing, majority of them are those who may not have witnessed this war. They do not understand what it is for one to be in a civil war.
Nsionu can only hope that when the time comes, Trump will throw his support behind the Biafra movement. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
There have been violent confrontations in Cameroon between police and striking lawyers this past week. Cameroon has two official languages, English and French. But more than 1,000 lawyers in English-speaking parts of the country are refusing to work until the government addresses what they say is the overbearing use of French in the justice system. Moki Edwin Kinzika has the story from Bamenda, Cameroon.
Cameroon's English-speaking lawyers are upset that police used tear gas and force to stop them from carrying out a peaceful march along the streets of Bamenda, capital of the Northwest region. It has been the same story for protests by lawyers in several other towns. Attorney Harmony Bogda, one of the organizers of the protest, says they want all French-speaking judges who do not understand English to be transferred out of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. Bogda says justice cannot be rendered when judges, magistrates and lawyers cannot communicate.
We are gentlemen, we are peaceful, and we have never meant any violence. It is now more than a month that we have been on strike after having notified the government about our dissatisfaction with the erosion of the common law.
But the government says it cannot discriminate based on language when assigning civil servants to their posts. Most Anglophone lawyers also speak French, but not vice versa. About one in five Cameroonians speak English. It is a holdover from when the Southwest and Northwest were under British colonial rule. Cameroon also recognizes two legal systems, one based on French civil law and the other English common law. But the striking lawyers say a set of regional laws in French, known as OHADA, is changing the balance. The OHADA Treaty was signed two decades ago by Cameroon and 16 other Francophone African nations to encourage investment in the region by harmonizing business law and implementation. The government says a commission is working on translating OHADA into English. State media report that the government has contacted the lawyers on strike and asked them to be patient. But the lawyers have broader demands, says international law scholar Ashu Nyente.
They have called for the creation of a separate chamber for common law at the Supreme Court of the country. Since independence in 1960, that court has had only French-speaking chief justices, even though the country is bilingual. They are also asking for the creation of a separate section for common law in the national institution that trains magistrates and judges in the country. The curricula of that school are essentially modeled in the French civil law system, and so the lawyers see that as a problem.
The lawyers' strike is not an isolated incident. Some in Cameroon worry that French is gradually eclipsing English in public life. The country's constitution states that the two official languages should be given the same consideration, but in practice, many official documents are only in French, prompting both written complaints from Anglophone journalists and work out by English-speaking lawmakers. English-speaking teachers have vowed to hold another strike beginning Friday. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Bamenda, Cameroon.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Prime Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo has resigned. Augustin Matata Ponyo stepped down Monday in accordance with a political deal that extends the presidency of Joseph Kabila. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people. Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.